Welcome to the Business of Publishing a Successful Book podcast, delivering cutting-edge tips, proven strategies, and welcome encouragement to overwhelmed yet determined authors. I'm your host, Elizabeth Lyons, a best-selling author and writing and publishing coach who helps others tell their stories and share their messages through a successfully published book. Through this podcast, I interview business leaders and disruptors to help you think outside the box and develop a mindset and strategy that work for your genre and end goals. Don't forget that on the homepage of publishaprofitablebook.com, you can get instant access to the popular What Is Your Why workshop, which walks you through the most simple yet critical question that best-selling authors answer long before they ever publish a book. Hi, everybody, and welcome to the latest edition of The Business of Publishing a Successful Book. I'm here today with Austin Distel, and I am so excited because Austin is the founder of the Entrepreneur Alliance, which I know you guys have heard me talk to you about a couple of times. It's the only, correct me if I say this wrong, I'm going to call it a mastermind group because that's how I kind of refer to these sorts of networking groups, but it's the only one that I'm a member of. And people ask me all the time, well, I want to join a group and I want to get, and people join many of them and then they get many, many different perspectives. And so I say, pick one. And Entrepreneur Alliance has been mine of choice now for, I don't know, eight months maybe. So thank you so much, Austin, for joining us. I'm so excited to chat with you.
Yeah, I'm excited to be here too. I love what you do. I love the interaction in the group. And
thanks. And you love my palette wall.
Okay, so we just compared palette walls, and
mine's cooler.
Like, just a she put in all the hard work into like staining and cutting this thing, and we went the cheap route where we got like this awesome sticky note kind of. It looks great.
It really does. So I'm not gonna lie. Yeah,
we ordered it from I think China or something. I don't know.
Of course you did.
But it was just like this sticky palette, and like we didn't have to cut anything. Didn't get sawdust everywhere, and like it took maybe 20 minutes.
Well, I was saying, like, if you could see, so this looks lovely behind me, but at my feet, I have a compressor tank on my right, I have steel pipe on my left. I mean, this is a whole project going on where it's one of those, I think it's a good analogy for building a business because you see this and it looks really pretty, but you don't see, like, the complete chaos that surrounds it. And, you know, I'm sitting in the middle of, like, it's like I'm in Lowe's. Anyway, wanted to talk to you for a couple different reasons. One, you're very big on the success mindset, which with authors is a really big deal, especially the authors with whom I work, because for the most part, they are as yet unpublished. They are not trained writers, right? So they don't have an MFA in creative writing. They haven't been to one of the big schools, whatever the case may be. And so they don't feel credentialed. And so they have to convince themselves first that they can be successful in this field. And the other thing about you that I find very fascinating, and your website, by the way, is fantastic. So I'll put, it's just so clean.
Thanks.
Like
it's like, really simple. Like I didn't try to overcomplicate it.
Yeah, well, you didn't. And it's great. And it proves that you sometimes simple is better, right? You're just like, here I am, here's what I do, and here's some links, and cool. But you talk about how you got really frustrated yourself with all the smoke and mirrors stuff. So just talk for a little bit about your journey and how you got to be, because man, you did this a couple, I think, just looking at you, I'm thinking a couple decades before I did.
Okay, so yeah, I am a young guy, 24 years old, but I've been building businesses. Like this is any sort of success I have now isn't overnight. I don't even think I've been close to making it yet, but I have been building businesses since I was 12. So I started my first company then. And it was really like, honestly, I just wanted independence. Like I hate asking permission. Uh-huh. That's my thing. It's like, I want to play life by my rules. And so if I wanted to go see Batman in theaters, I didn't want to have to ask mom for money. And so I started a little lawn care business when I was 12. I was on the goal. My mindset was focused on like, how do I get independent? Got up to about $1,000 a month in income by 13 and just kind of like grew a team from there. And when I was 21, ended up selling that company, went Entrepreneur of Georgia for some stuff there and went off to college. And it was tough for me to build that lawn business from college. So ended up selling it. And that's when about the time that I started in online. So I was actually pre-dental in college at the time.
Oh, my gosh.
Like, I know, right? Totally Jordan Belfort here, where he was pre-dental and then went into finance.
Right.
I feel like the same way. Is like I was sold on this dream of, like, you got to go and get that MD next to your name, or DDS, whatever it is.
Whatever it is.
Yeah. And, okay, so me personally, here's the reason why I did it. Right, so I played hockey. I have some fake teeth here.
Okay.
I got used to going to the dentist, and I would always wake up from my surgery, and, like, beautiful women always work in dentist office, right?
Yeah, okay.
And, like, the dentist himself was, like, this cool guy. He drove, like, a Porsche. He didn't work on Mondays or Fridays. I'm like, that's my role model.
Okay.
All right, so it's like I oriented everything around that, did really well in school for the first 2 years while building my business, and then I read this book. Rich Dad, Poor Dad.
Uh-huh.
Have you read it?
I actually haven't. I'll be very honest. I'd like to read it, but I haven't.
It's okay. So it's one of the New York Times bestsellers of all time. Like, it held the ranks up there for more than most books in the business section do. And so I'll bring up a quote later by him. I think it's really relevant. But I learned about the cash flow quadrant of, like, employee, self-employed, big business, and investor, and how they all work differently. And so right after, I'm not kidding you, the morning after reading that book, I changed my major to marketing.
Oh, how fun.
And after 2 years, and I had, like, a 4.3 in all my biology, like, I just, like, I realized that's not who I want to be. I want to own a big business. I want it to work without me. And I wanted, you know, just be able to travel and have a different kind of lifestyle. So fast forward, got around to other marketers, raised my hand to be in my fraternity to be, like, the website master.
Yeah.
And built my first website. I actually raised my hand to do it and didn't even know how. Like, I didn't even know what WWW meant.
Sure.
I had no idea. So binge watched YouTube, figured out how to build a school site, threw up one, had a lot of fun, started doing, like, startup websites, and then I got into digital marketing. I changed my major, or I guess I narrowed my major from, like, marketing to, like, a brand new major that had just, I was, like, first class to do it at UGA was digital marketing.
Okay.
And, like, how to use the internet to sell things.
Yes.
I was like, that's me. I want to learn that. That's cool. And it's like the wild, wild west. That's what I thought WWW meant. So I went on to figure out this whole online thing. And that's when I started, like, figuring out how to sell my clients. I would build a website, and I figure out how do I get people to go to the website.
Yep.
And that's where I learned Facebook ads, Google AdWords, you know, and SEO. I started selling that stuff. Got around my mentor, Dave, who's on the other side of that wall.
Yep.
And, you know, I know you know him very well as well. Great guy. And so he introduced me on how to build my agency through a course called 6K Success.
Uh-huh.
And through this course, ended up getting, you know, my income to a six-figure agency. And, you know, that was over MRR. So it wasn't like I made six figures. But, I got to $8,700 a month. That was, like, my goal. I did it within 8 months. So I didn't have to get a job. Again, I wanted the independence.
Yeah.
Around that time is when Dave said, hey, Austin, I'd like you to move up here. Let's work together and build the Entrepreneur Alliance.
Okay.
So that's where we're at now.
Okay.
We're 8 months into EA as we record this, and I feel really proud of our results, really feel proud that we attract awesome people like you.
Thanks.
So, yeah, that's pretty long, right? Like, that's
that was great. Kind
of. I guess a lot of pieces in there, but yeah.
Yeah, I was, like, writing some things down because you said, you know, so the thing I love about the Entrepreneur Alliance, one of the things is that, well, first of all, it's a great group of people. That's one. Two, it's not massive yet, right? So there are some groups, it's big enough, certainly, that you can always get a response to questions, but it's not so big that you get lost in there. And I've had, regardless of which business of mine I'm dealing with, I'm in all of them, I'm doing Facebook ads, I'm doing lead pages, I'm doing lead magnets, I'm doing giveaways, whatever it is. And so as I teach all my authors to do, people get very overwhelmed by all of that, understandably. And I've never had a problem going into the EA Facebook group and saying, oh my God, somebody help me. And someone always does, you know, and I've built some really cool business relationships and networks that way, and it's been super fun. So one of the things that you said that I love is you didn't know what you know, you raised your hand to do it and you were like, but I don't know how. So yeah. With authors, when I started publishing back in 03, self-publishing, you didn't do that. I mean, I did, because I'm a rule, you know, I was like, if you say no to me enough times, I'm just going to go do it myself. That's just the way it is. So I figured it out, but it wasn't common. And so the resources and the tools and the experts and the gurus and all these people, they weren't around. Fast forward to today, wildly different. Now everybody's self-publishing a book, especially in the entrepreneurial field, but also, and I don't mean everybody as though you have to, but it's become so accessible. And people though feel like, well, I can't figure it out. So what gave you the confidence to be able to raise your hand and just say, I'll do it and figure it out later, which is what we all have to do?
Yeah. You know, I feel like all the pivotal moments in my life came from, and I didn't know this as I did it, but it just came from just saying, I'll give it a shot. Like, I'm going to put my best out on the line. If I fall on my face, it happens. I'll get back up, go to the next thing.
Yeah.
But if it does happen and it goes well, then I'll progress. Yeah. And so I've just kind of figured out that if I test myself and I apply myself to new things and I try it with, even if I have no idea how I'm going to do it, I just set my mindset on it, things happen, right? Like the universe will get out your way if you're committed. And so I will just focus on my goal. I'll keep it all around me. And like, if my goal was to learn how to build a website, well, I'm going to surround myself with people that know how to build websites.
Exactly.
I'm going to go online, figure out how to do it. And if it looks like crap the first time, so be it. But at least it's a starting point.
Yeah.
And, you know, for me, it's, I've had the struggle, and I think a lot of book publishers probably do too, is the struggle between progress and perfection.
Yeah.
Right? So, like, I'm dealing with this a lot too, is like, launch the damn thing already and go out and make it happen. And some people are going to say, like, you have spelling errors. Some people are going to say, like, you know, should probably have a better book cover or whatever. But at the end of the day, it's like, well, you're published.
Yeah.
Right? And they're not.
Absolutely. So, and I'm...
Yeah,
I'm a huge believer in that. No, for sure. And the progress over... See, the thing about perfection and people feeling like... And this is just my opinion. I'm not a licensed therapist, but I probably should be. The thing about perfection is that people... They're not really afraid that it's not perfect. They're afraid of rejection. So they say, it's not right yet. It's not right yet. What if, what if, what if, what if? Because I think that especially in the world of books, right, writers, especially if you're writing fiction or memoir, but even in nonfiction, we are very susceptible to other people's needing other people's validation to say, you did a good job. So it's either you're a good writer, you're a good storyteller, or you're a good business person and you have some really good tips. And so we're afraid to hit publish, which is, you don't actually hit publish, but you know, we're afraid to publish the book because there's a fear that someone is going to say it's not good enough just because it wasn't published by HarperCollins or Penguin or Random House or some such thing. And so I love that you said that. Now let's talk about learning, right? So you go out and when you want to figure out how to do something, I mean, obviously YouTube is a great option. So you use that, you watch videos. We do, their resources are everywhere. But what are your tips for getting a small crew of mentors and experts who you follow and subscribe to their theory and way? Because if you're following five different people, they're doing five different things, and you are like a hamster on a wheel.
Totally.
You know?
Okay, so I only read one book at a time.
Okay. Oh,
right?
God.
Like that's big for me.
I don't
know
how you do that.
I read one book at
a
time.
What are you reading right now?
It. Okay, so I'm reading right now. I don't have it near me. I always put my books after I read them up here.
Oh, okay.
It's Automatic Customer.
Oh.
And so it's all about like how to build a recurring revenue business.
Gotcha.
And so that's what I'm reading right now. And like when I read, like I study. I don't just casually read. Like I have a highlighter out.
Yep.
And my personal way is like I'm a slow reader, but my mind thinks fast.
Uh-huh.
So like it's weird. Anyway, the way I get around that is I buy the audio and I buy the physical. And I put in the audio, I put it on 2x speed, I put it on 2x speed. I have my highlighter, and I'm listening, but I'm highlighting quickly, and like I'm getting it so much more.
Wow, that's
I feel
really
like fascinating. I personally get a lot out of
okay.
it. That way. Yeah,
that's so interesting.
I think that's unique to me. I don't want to
I think it is too. But I think it's cool.
Yeah, I put it on 2x speed and I highlight like crazy.
That's interesting. Well, everybody learns differently, so you know.
I think that's a great point because, you know, in school, it's cookie cutter. Like, you have to learn this way.
Right.
And so I didn't realize that. I didn't realize the learning methods. Like, there's three kinds of people: auditory, kinesthetic, and visual.
Yep.
And so when I realized myself that I'm great at consuming audio, but I'm not great at consuming visual.
Yeah.
In the same way, I like a video. That's good for me.
Yes.
But as far as, like, reading a textbook.
Right.
I'd so rather have the audio version, and I can repeat it. And so, actually, like, I retain audio really well. I don't know how.
Okay.
But, like, I listen to motivational speaking a lot.
Yeah,
and
sure.
I can listen to a tape a few times and, like, know the speech.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah. Well,
so, that's how I learn.
Well, and because everybody learns differently, I mean, that's why different courses and different programs work for different people, too. Like, for me, I'm a very visual person. I have to see it. So when I am learning about lead magnets or funnels or ads or whatever it is that has a 37,000 step process, right? If I just see that written, I will just go get in bed and turn on Netflix. That is too much. I can't, I don't even know where to start. But if you diagram it out for me, you know, in video format, and you show me this, you're going to do this, and then step two is you're going to do this. And so because that's how I learn, that's also how I teach. But I appreciate that, like, I have, you know, people download stuff, people listen to stuff. What are you pulling out?
So maybe we're similar here. I don't know really what I am, because you're never just one, right? Like, you're a primary, and then you have an underground one.
Yeah.
So, like, personally, I would listen.
One.
So, like, this is one of my journals. I have many.
Okay.
But, whenever I listen to a speech, I will draw out, let's say, for example, like, this is all one about association. I have, like, birds flying and stuff. Birds of feather flock together.
Okay.
You know, be enthusiastic. Where's the one? Welcome call. This is interesting. Employees, here's one.
Yeah.
Employees seek security. Entrepreneurs seek freedom.
Yeah.
Security. With more security, you have less freedom. So people with the most security are in prison. That's why they call it maximum security. And if you want freedom,
right,
must leave all security behind. And it's like that quote just really resonated with me, because, like, so many of us are clinging to our job, which is our security.
Yeah.
But we see the light of building your own business or whatever it is, and that's the freedom of it. Like, security over here, guaranteed paycheck.
Right.
Security over here, you clock in and clock out, and you don't have to worry about things after work as much, right? And, you know, you have a pension plan and all that. That's the security side.
Mm-hmm.
You want to go even further, you're going to get meals prepared for you in a jail cell, tell you when you can get out. On this side, right, like, there's self-employment, then there's big business. So self-employment, think about this, is like, you have some security, but you're probably the first one in, last one out.
Yep.
So, like, that's the security of it.
Yeah.
But the freedom is that you choose when. So if you go further and you build a big business, you have less security but more freedom.
Correct.
Less security being that you're putting your lifeline into other people's hands. Other people's hands are building your business. So that's, like, less security there.
Yeah.
But now you have more freedom.
You have to grow into that.
Yeah, it's a whole risk reward system.
Yep.
So don't think that it's a cliff. This is what a lot of people, like, I think, jump off into business. You don't need to jump. It is a gradual moving into the sea.
Mm-hmm.
You're walking out. They're not jumping out.
Correct.
Makes sense? Yeah.
Totally
makes sense. It's a gradient.
Absolutely. And I often tell people, don't quit your day job. You know, Marie Forleo, who I love, talks about a bridge job.
Yeah.
She talks about it all the time. Like, there's no, just because you have a secure, whatever it is, job, 9 to 5, and you're writing a book or building a business or whatever the case may be, it doesn't mean that you're not a real entrepreneur. And you know, I talk to authors about being entrepreneurial, because at the end of the day, if you want to just sit in your house and write because you love to write and you're writing stories for yourself or to pass down through your family, then you're a writer. If you want to make a living selling books, you have to be an entrepreneur as well. You can't just be a writer. And it's hard because many authors are very much introverts. And so to actually put themselves out there and sell and connect with readers, but that's what you have to do. So
wait, real quick, I want to talk on that for a second, because that book that changed my life, so when I went from pre-dental to marketing, was Rich Dad, Poor Dad.
Yeah.
And Robert Kiyosaki is a multi-time best-selling author. So like he has several books that all have killed it. And he talks about an experience one time with a reporter. And she like talks about how like, oh my God, like I could never publish the book. Like I'm just not as good of a writer as you. And he goes, that's where you're wrong. I bet you're a better writer than I am. But what does that sticker say on my book? And she goes,
best-selling author. Yep.
and he goes, exactly. It's best-selling author.
Not best writing. Yep.
And so it just made me realize, like, holy crap, like it is all about the sales. It doesn't matter how qualified you are as a as a linguist or as a grammar expert. Like anybody can write a book,
but you need to be a grammar expert, Austin. It's very important.
I know. That's why, because I'm awful at spelling openly, though. But like, yeah, it's true though. Like, you can write a book. You need to learn like all the technical parts of it. But at the end of the day, it's about sales.
You better sell it. And I give the example, and it's embarrassing to give this example, but it's the best one. I give this example all the time to my crew, which is 50 Shades of Grey. Is the most, I'm sorry, E.L. James, poorly written book ever. I mean, it is not, it's written at like a first grade level, obviously not first grade content, but she is not a literary genius. You know, we're not talking about like, but the point is that the story sold, the concept sold, whether it's business or fantasy or memoir or whatever it is. The reason that it sells is because people identify with it. It's why any business sells. You're solving a problem that someone has. So that's why I get with authors real fast on what is your why. Because they always come to me and they say, well, I have a great idea for a book. How do I publish it? And I, before we even launch into that, what is your why? Why do you want to do it?
My first mentor said, if your why is strong, the how is easy.
Oh, I love that.
Yep. So basically saying that, like, whenever you have something that you're just so passionate about, you'll figure out a way. Think about this analogy, right? Like if your kid was on a burning building on the other side, and you're on the other skyscraper, and there was like just one beam connecting the two buildings. Well, the why is really strong. You need to save your child who's on a burning building rooftop, and you're on the other rooftop. The how, you're going to make
it. You just figure it out.
You'll walk across, you'll climb across, doesn't matter how you get there, but you will get there. And that's with anything. If your mindset is sharp and you just want it, if you want it so bad that you're willing to die for it, that all of a sudden the universe will get out your way.
Get out your way. So let's talk about this whole smoke and mirrors thing, because I love this, right? So one of the other things that you said on your website, have on your website that I really identify with was the concept of comparing yourself to other people. And the concept of continuing. So you've never really made it as an entrepreneur, right? I mean, I guess if you can say, well, my definition of success is I want to have $1 million in the bank. And then you get to that point, you can say, okay, I'm done. But if your brain works as most entrepreneurs' brains work, they can't just be done. They have to, I saw an article the other day, by the way, I think it was on, I'll try to send it to you. It was like Wall Street Journal or Inc. or I don't know, New York Times. But about how an entrepreneur, there's an actual personality type that's being identified that belongs to entrepreneurs, in that we can't, we go out and we see something that needs to be fixed and we just go, can we make a business out of that? Like, how can that be fixed? But even Gary Vee, who I love, and I know you love him too, is, he started and made hundreds and hundreds of videos for the wine library, right? Had like one viewer, five viewers, whatever, just kept going. And of course, look at him today. So sometimes people look at Gary and think it's an overnight success, which there is no such thing. There is no such thing. But Gary's still building too. Marie Forleo's still building. You know, Amy Porterfield's still building. Everybody, David Simon Garland, so everybody's still kind of getting up to that next level. And if they all compared themselves to one another, you get caught up in that.
Totally.
And so as authors and writers, I say don't, like, I guess one thing I would ask you is, what are your tips for not getting stuck in that feeling of, I will never be, or I am not yet as good as fill in the blank?
I think that it's about the fill in the blank. So if you're comparing yourself to somebody else's potential, that's when you're tripping right now. You need to look at what is your potential.
Okay.
Right? So if you are better than you were yesterday, I feel like that's a pretty good piece of progress. As long as, like, you're always chasing your shadow, almost like when I was playing Mario Kart back when I was a kid, and you would play solo player mode, and your best score is this ghost, and he's always going around the track, and you're trying to beat the ghost on the track, and, like, you know, you're Mario, and you're trying to beat Luigi here, and one day you finally do. And now the bar has been raised, and you have to race him again and again and again. And, like, the game never ends. Right. You're never going to beat your future self.
Right.
You know, but that's okay. Like, understand that. Michael Jordan, he has a famous quote where he says that you can that every day he stepped on the court, he never competed with anybody else other than the best person, the best athlete that he knew he could be.
Yeah.
So he worked on self-development rather than comparing others' development. And that's the only way to exceed the people that you look up to, is to not look up to them, right? Like, to see them as, oh, wow, okay, I understand, like, what's possible, but I need to know
that's
what I
it.
Can
that's
right there.
It.
So you're looking at, oh, man, what was that runner's name in 1957? First guy, in Bannister. Richard Bannister, I think.
If you're asking me anything about sports, you are asking the wrong person.
Anyway, in 1957 or 59, Roger Bannister ran the first 4-minute mile. Before that, literally thousands and thousands of years, the Olympics, nobody said it was possible to do a 4-minute mile. And then within 1 year of him crushing the 4-minute mile, 70-something other people did this.
Right.
Nowadays, have high schoolers running a 4-minute mile or less. And so it's like nothing changed in our DNA, in our species. The only thing that changed was the potential, our mindset of what we thought was possible. And now once we broke that barrier, then now we know what's possible. Anybody can do it. It just raised the bar.
Yeah.
So yourself, raise the bar. And, like, it's all about trying, not setting the expectations of what will happen, but saying, I'm going to give it everything I got. And I'm not going to record this progress now, but I'm gonna just map it out and not have any expectations. I'm going to make the jump.
Yeah.
See how far I can do it. And now that I have a benchmark of the best I can do, I'm going to push and do it all I can do. So let me go into that further, because this is something
Please
I'm passionate
do.
About. I thought
okay.
about. I'm at the gym, right? And every day I look at, like, how many push-ups I can do.
Mm-hmm.
And let's say it's 25. All right, that's the best I can do. But I know that's not all I can do, because what? The next day, I can do another 25, right? And so the next day after that, I'll do another 25 and another 25 and then another 27. 27, I thought the best I could do was 25.
25, right.
Because not only did I do the best I could do, but I did all that I could do. So over time, I got better and better and better, and now you can get up to 40 or 50. And eventually, you'll be able to 10x what your best was. Now, here's really where the punchline is how do you not only do the best you can do, but all you can do? It's the rest time in between. So as you're growing your skill sets, if I waited a week in between my push-ups, I probably would be flatlined for a really long time.
Yeah.
Probably wouldn't make much growth. But I shorten the time span between the best I can do and all I can do. And all of a sudden, now I'll start to see the stair step. And, you know, I think they say in one of the old books, you know, if you wait too long, the weeds take the garden.
I don't know. But that makes sense.
If weeds take the garden.
right?
Like, you want to make sure that you're always honing your skills and becoming the best you can. And so you wait too long, the weeds take the garden. Yep. Wait too short, and you fatigue. So you got to find that
momentum, that right momentum,
to be able to grow to be the best potential that you could be. But you can always raise that potential.
For sure. And what I think is interesting is that we hear oftentimes, I hear it a lot from writers. I don't know if you hear it a lot, but people saying, I can't do that. It's never been done before. Nobody's ever done that before. And I think until they have, right? Yeah. So there are two mindsets. You can follow the crowd or you can lead the crowd. Now, people yeah. are often uncomfortable taking that leadership position. But to your point about the runner, right, once somebody proves it can be done, and that's exactly yeah. what happened in the self-publishing world. So people started doing it, and all of the big houses and everybody looked at them and said, oh, just wait, that this'll never work. Well, it really worked for a lot of people. And it took time, and it took commitment and dedication and, you know, passion and all those kinds of things. But once those initial folks came out and showed what was possible, all of a sudden other people were going, yeah, I want that too. Now, the challenge is hearing what other people have done and believing or being told that they can do it in 30 seconds, right? So that's yeah. another part of the smoke and mirrors thing.
Yeah.
And where I see it a lot is people saying, you know, I wrote a book and I sold 300,000 copies in 2 months and I can teach you how to do the same. But the piece that they leave out is that their mailing list is, you know, 30,000 people long, right? They leave that out. And so, and I'm not speaking about anybody specifically. Yeah. I mean, but right. but it's very important to remember that as you're building a business, whatever that business is, you don't know what you don't know what you don't know.
Yeah.
So all that glitters isn't gold. And you just have to stay in your lane mm-hmm. and keep moving forward. And to your analogy about if you're on a building and your kid's on the other building and it's burning or whatever, you don't really think in that analogy, you don't necessarily think like, well, how am I, you just get up on that beam and start running and you don't even remember yeah. I'm super afraid of heights. And this is like a really not, I should be really afraid right now. Sometimes you yeah. have to put some thought into it when you're building businesses, but on the other hand, you can't put so much thought into it that you have paralysis by analysis and you never take that step.
Absolutely.
You know, so I think that's so super critical. I wrote down one other. So, well, we were talking about the unicorn, which was kind of funny. So tell me, what is your, who are your mentors? Like, who are your, I don't want to say the people who you strive to be like, but who do yeah. you really, who emulates a lifestyle and an approach to business that you really respect?
So I have different mentors for different things. Mm-hmm. Because I realized, like, it's hard to find somebody that has all the qualities that you want, right? So like, I respect Gary Vee's hustle and I like his creativity and I like all of this, except he's not the family man I want him to be. And he also is stuck in one location. Like, he does travel, but it's specifically for, like, work.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, well, okay, are you going to work till you die?
Yeah.
Never really experience everything else.
Sure.
So I would say, like, Tim Ferriss is a big guy for me on that. Like, I love Tim Ferriss so much, right? Like, the 4-Hour Work Week,
yeah.
one of my favorite books.
Yep.
Right? So there's that side, although 4-Hour Work Week, that's a little extreme too, right?
Yeah.
Like, I get a lot of passion out of doing stuff like this and yeah. building, you know, businesses. Like, that's fun to me. I get a lot of emotional enjoyment out of seeing that succeed. So,
but that's also a great example. Let me interrupt you for 2 seconds. I'm like yeah. going to admittedly interrupt you. That is another great example, the 4-Hour Work Week, of, you know, Tim took this concept, right? And then yeah. people who don't necessarily have it in them to work for it, bought the book and read the book and thought, I'm going to read this book and learn how to immediately work 4 hours a week and make as much money, right? And so you really have to take all of it with, I don't want to say with a grain of salt, because that's not true, but I love what you're saying about taking different things from different people. And like Marie Forleo, I adore. She doesn't have kids yet. I have 5. So sometimes I seek out, you know, Rachel Hollis or somebody else who has for different things, right? For those different areas. So keep going with what you're saying about Tim.
Yeah, well, I mean, just Tim, you know, his philosophies in that book have really helped me shift, like, what's important and, you know, 80-20, everything is, like, a big mission of ours, focusing on the 20% of things that create 80% of the results. And, you know, I let's say, for example, like, I don't think Tim is the best on-stage speaker, along with Elon Musk. Like, Elon is really bad stage presence.
Yes.
So that's, I don't look up to him in that aspect. I look up to him in that aspect of, like, dreaming really, really big.
Of course.
So then I look at, as far as, like, who do I want to be as a speaker one day? Mm-hmm. Les Brown is one of my mentors. I've met with him many times.
Okay.
So, like, I listen to him a lot. I love Tony Robbins, of course.
Of course.
And I would say Gary Vaynerchuk has this audacity about him, which isn't personally me. Like, I am not as confrontational as he is.
Okay.
So I respect a lot of things he says, but he's just so, like, in your face and pushy.
Yes.
So I'm
his
more of, like,
inspire
rather than force. What's that?
His podcasts are all explicit.
Very true.
But,
and
like,
so, I think that there's always a new space. There's always a new positioning for anybody to become a brand expert of some kind.
Of course.
Right, like somebody to look up to that you share all the same morals and values. You're working on the same kind of business, you know. You're doing the same things, and I think that's really important that as you build your brand and your audience, you openly share who you are as a person and not who you think that they want you to be, because all the time people are listening and they're saying, "I agree with that," "I disagree with that," and they're just gonna critique you. Well, you're going to cultivate your 1,000 followers, which is all you need. You need 1,000 raving fans to be wildly successful. You don't need more than that, right? So you find your core 1,000 people that are like rah, rah behind you, like, that's my guy, that's my girl. And I think if you can cultivate that, everything else will fall into place. You know, some people are going to hate on Gary Vee, and some people are going to worship him. And then
are just going to be right in the middle, like what you're saying. I mean, the thing is, and this is such a brilliant point on your part, Austin, because it's so important to remember that everyone is not brilliant at everything.
Yeah.
So you can be Elon Musk and, I mean, hello, and have horrible stage presence. You can be Gary Vee and be perceived as, and be, you know, super successful, but be like harsh as can be. You can, I mean, you know, Chelsea Handler, you can be Chelsea Handler, but there are a lot of people who don't want to go see her do stand up because she's a little offensive. I think she's fantastic.
Yeah.
But, you know, so it's like, that is a very different, you said another thing, you know, 1,000 followers. So I want to talk to you about that. But first, what I want to say about that is that this is what I preach constantly. I don't care how many people are on your email list. I care how many engaged people are on your email list. Because if you send an email out to 500,000 people and only 3 people open it and no one clicks or buys or whatever your goal is, that there is no, you don't need to feel good about the fact that you have and you're paying for it too. Like, that's, you know, I would rather you have 500 people on your list who are genuinely, you are genuinely building a rapport with as a writer, as an entrepreneur, whatever you're doing. And when you send out emails, they know, oh, this is going to be something good. Like, EA is a perfect example. When Dave sends out emails, I put them in my little to read folder, because I know I'm not going to get to them. So that's how I start my day. I do my 30 minutes of catching up with all the stuff. But 99% of the emails that I get from people, I don't ever open.
Yeah.
You know? So it's about building something where people really are engaging with you voluntarily. They want to hear what you have to say. Now, where do you come up with the 1,000 number?
So there's a lot of articles on this. This is not like me originally.
Is it proven tipping point of some sort?
Yeah, it's just, and you know, 1,000, like, it's arbitrary, right?
Yeah.
Like, you know, but 1,000 is basically like, if you can cultivate and really get to know and understand 1,000 people's specific problem, relate with them, you know, you're going to have raving fans for the rest of your life, and you do good by 1,000 people, then you're set. They'll share the word. They'll be your biggest promoters. And it's the whole 80-20, right? Like, there's going to be 20% of your followers that will give you 80% of the praise.
Yes.
Right? Like, and then there's only, you know, 80% of the people will only give you 20% of the praise.
Correct.
Right. So think about, like, out of all your readers, there's going to be a couple. And I would say it's more like 90-10 than 80-20.
Yeah. Or 95-5.
Exactly. Right. And you'll notice, like, I think you guys do a lot of, like, affiliate promotions maybe, or, like, I don't know all the marketing styles for books, but, like, there's going to be a very small percentage of people that will get the most book sales or reviews for you.
Right.
Versus everybody else, all your other readers. It's like a very small number. So if you can focus on just cultivating 1,000, 1,000 is a lot, but 10,
it is a lot.
Then go to 100, then 1,000. But make sure you're diving deep with as many people as you can. And around the 1,000 lovers part, then it's going to multiply like crazy.
Well, and that's the thing, too, is that if you look at it as 1,000, you're like, oh, my God, that is a lot. But you just, you go, it's people say to me, I want to write a book. I don't know how to get all the content out of my brain and onto paper. And I say, get out a piece of paper and write a sentence. There you go. Like, it's literally a word, a sentence, a paragraph, a chapter at a time. It's a customer at a time. And then one of the great things about marketing today is that Facebook especially has gotten so good at lookalike audiences that if you can find those 1,000 people and you can replicate and continue to replicate, it takes a lot of the, you still have to be, it's not a perfect science, right? You still have to be in touch with everybody. But authors are often wondering, well, once I sell the book, now what? Like, I've sold you, now I've got to go find another customer. And I'm like, no. Because, you know, my first book came out in 2003. It still sells really well because the people who bought it and I've cultivated relationships back then, it's about having twins. So when they hear about someone who's now expecting twins, they say, oh, there's this book. So there's kind of this forward, it's like pays it backward, pays it forward, pays it in every direction. But it comes from authentic connection. And the challenge, so I'll ask you one last question, which is, what have you found a lot of success with in terms of, you know, we're all bombarded with stuff. We're all bombarded with, join my list and I'll send you this free, we all do it too, right?
Yeah.
And we subscribe and we're on both ends of that. But to be heard and to build truly genuine relationships with your customers outside of all of that noise.
Yeah. I would say we're still doing this more. Like, I think that we could do a better job, but I found that if you can understand where they are in the big scheme of your relationship, are they just kind of getting to know you? Have they no idea who you are? All the way down to, like, okay, they bought a couple things from me, so they, like, understand me, but, like, at what point do they fall madly in love, you know, with what we're doing here?
Yes.
Knowing where they are on the spectrum and then creating content
that
is specific to each category. So, I mean, if you want to look at it as a sales funnel, right, like, up here, they have no idea who you are, and so, like, the wording is probably a little bit more bland. You can't show as much personality, and you don't share personal stories as much. But then, as you get down here, like, you can talk about family life. You can talk about things that went wrong in your day, and, like, you're not judged for it. You're not, like, held.
Oh, you are, but
but as much, like, they still relate.
No,
like,
don't laugh at all. Yes, absolutely. Right.
It's like almost like you're at family point this time. Like, they love you. It's like, that's really funny. You know, I'm glad you shared that with me. But you can get more personal and intimate here at the bottom of the funnel as they buy more things from you and as they get to know your story. But think about, like, have they heard this part yet? You know, at what part is it appropriate to share the next thing?
Yes.
You know, and building that more intimate connection. I love videos for this, right? Like, I don't think there's anything more powerful than sharing your stories and mini stories, like, just throwing it out there.
Yeah.
Like, just a little part. And they all add up together. Like, they'll remember over time, and they'll start to piece the whole thing together over time about your story.
Yeah.
And if you can tell that in the whole sales process leading up to the book, why you wrote the book is important. You know, and sharing that on camera, like, yeah, I wrote this book not only to help, you know, I felt like it was almost my obligation to write this book because of what I've experienced. And like, if you know anybody that also feels this way, and like, talk about feelings more than just like the logical reason to read it. Right, you'll learn this and this. No, you need to learn this and this because
it will help
of the reason why.
Right, the transformation, right? Where is that? And I think that many times authors, especially when they're writing about their own story, they are uncomfortable selling because they feel like, oh gosh, if my book, and I've been here, if my book can help you, I should just give it to you. Mm-hmm. So how do you get past that? That concept of knowing you can help somebody, but also knowing that your time, your expertise, your experience is worth,
so
in this case, money.
Here's what I think about free is you're not only doing a disservice to yourself, but I think you're doing a disservice to them. Because when you pay for something, you take it more seriously.
Absolutely.
Right? So a lot of people are a part of a lot of free Facebook groups.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what happens in that is the value of the group goes down.
Mm-hmm.
Not only for the quality of people that will go in there because, like, there's no barrier to entry, so you'll get a bunch of, you know, random people in there. But you also, your mindset, you're like, this isn't probably as valuable of content, you know, et cetera, right? I'm not hearing from the best and brightest minds.
Right.
So, like, you look at EA, just a small $30 a month gateway to get in.
Right.
Greatly not only increases the value of the quality of people in the community, but also it increases the value of the content created.
Absolutely.
I think that we're all wise enough now to realize that if it's free, it's probably worth being free.
Yeah.
And if it's paid, it's probably worth being paid. So know what your worth is.
Yes.
And know that, like, if they're going to pay for a course of yours, then they're going to take it seriously. I know that when I pay for a $1,000 course, I'm, like, going to take time out of my day.
Absolutely.
I'm going to, like, go through the videos. I'm going to make sure I shut everything else off. You have my full attention. But if somebody hands me a free course, like, I might get to it. I might not. And if I do get to it, I'm going to bounce around. Like, I'm not as prepared.
100%.
It's a priming thing. And your customers, like, they have to be primed to take the information, and they have to, like, there has to be an environment around it. And that's what giving your products a price does, is it primes them for what to expect out of it.
Well, they have to make an investment. Right? Like, literally, they have to become invested by making an investment. So, and I, as I say, lots of times, if someone doesn't purchase it from you, they will purchase it from someone else. You know, unless they're just the person who just goes around and looks for everything that's free, in which case that's probably not your customer. You know, we all have that, that happens in every industry, but that's, you know, so I really like that. That's good. You're very, you're a very wise 24-year-old. I'm like, can you sit down with my 15-year-olds, and they want to build businesses. Let's get that going. So
no, I think I brainwashed myself, to be honest. That's how I got here. Just audio.
We all did. We all did. We've all brainwashed ourselves. So I'm going to put links to your site, your Facebook, everything with this when I put it up. But for people who are just listening, what's the best way to find you?
Yeah, I mean, like, I'll accept people on Facebook that I see mutual friends with. or if you send me a message.
Okay.
And, like, but there's just way too many spams out there lately. So I don't accept really anybody unless they, like, say, hey, I'm from here. I wanted to, you know, become friends.
Okay.
I respond to all my Instagram direct messages. So you can find me at Austin Distel.
Okay.
I post a lot more, like, personal stuff, like where I'm flying to and, like, what I'm working on and who I'm hanging out with. Whereas, like, I feel like Facebook is a lot more, like, businessy and stuff. So,
are you on Twitter?
Which is great.
All?
Like, if you want to learn skills, I'm going to post a lot of great stuff on how to do some marketing on my Facebook. I'm not going to do as much about that on Instagram. I'm going to talk more about, like, you know, the cool, you know, things I'm experiencing in my hotel room or, like, flying first class or whatever it is. Like, I want to, like, share that kind of parts of my life. So I would say those two places. Obviously, I spend a lot of time in the Entrepreneur Alliance. That's, like, you know, baby is where I put all my information.
Yeah.
And it's like where I want to help you build a business. And so unfortunately, like, I don't have a ton of time to do like consulting or stuff outside of EA. Right. But if you're inside EA, like, we're going to create a lot of content for you. And it'll be really tailored to helping you guys build a business around the book.
Absolutely.
So not specifically saying like, hey, here's how you sell books, but no, here's how you sell, apply these tactics and strategies to your book
yep.
sales.
And that's exactly what we're looking to do, is to teach people how to build a business around a book. Your book is not your business. Your book is merely a portion thereof, you know? So are you on Twitter at all?
Not really.
I love that. Yes!
I have some autoresponder that's posting okay. for me. And it's just cycles. That's not me.
I love it. I'll tell you, I was talking to somebody yesterday and he said, are you on Twitter? And I said, you know, I'm on there, but I can't keep up. I find that I have to pick the platforms that are the best for me and really focus on those. And for me, that's Facebook and Instagram. Twitter, I go out occasionally. The reason I like Twitter and the reason I got on Twitter is because I am verbose. Like, I like learning how to take things from... I can write a novel, but I also need to be able to say it in 5 words. So Twitter yeah. limits me in that way. So it's great training to do that.
Totally.
But this person I was talking to was like, you're just really missing out if you're not on Twitter. And I thought, I really just don't think I am. So I'm going to tell him. I'm going to say, Austin's not on it. So everything's fine. I don't need to be on there.
Goal, right?
Yeah, it's not
whatever
happening.
Whatever I say goes, right?
Right.
No, that's awesome. I totally agree with that. I think that some people that are Twitter famous, you know, could probably not be the best camera people. Like, and then camera people that are great on YouTube probably don't have, like, you know, the best thing.
It's the same
Twitter.
Philosophy.
So it's like, find your skill and work that there.
Yep, find your skill and figure out where it works and figure out where your market is and be there. Don't be on YouTube if your market is on Instagram. That makes absolutely zero
totally.
Sense. So for anyone who's listening, I greatly encourage you to check out Entrepreneur Alliance. It's an absolutely fantastic group. I am never leaving. You're not going to ever kick me out, are you?
Like, you're one of the 1,000.
Yes. And I'm one of the few. Now it's growing. But in the beginning...
No, I didn't mean out of that. I mean out of
top fans.
I gotcha.
Oh, thank you right, so right. much. But women, we need more women in this group, Austin.
Totally.
Yeah.
We do.
There's
yeah,
great women in there. Don't get me wrong. And I'm loving watching it grow. But that's my mission, is to bring more women to the Entrepreneur Alliance. Yes.
I love that. Yes. You know, I should link you with one of my friends, Taylor Dixon. She is mm-hmm. all about, like, women empowerment and building a business. So she's very entrepreneurial, is building mm-hmm. an agency. And she's starting this, like, club for business women.
Oh,
it should
I'd
be
love
pretty-
to connect with her. All right, let's yeah. do it. I'll have her on, too. That would be super fun. Well, thank
awesome.
You so, so much for your time. I appreciate it. This has been awesome.
Yeah, and this was a lot of fun, guys. And anybody, reach out to me. Be glad to talk.
Wonderful.
But see you all on the inside.
Okay, I'll talk to you later. Thank you so much for listening. Don't forget to join the conversation at facebook.com/publishaprofitablebook or join the Book Writing and Publishing Lab Mastermind group over on Facebook. Again, if you're interested in the free What Is Your Why workshop, simply visit www.publishaprofitablebook.com to get instant access. Talk with you again soon.